I'm not sure about that, right? Okay. Do you want to take a scarf? Here, take this Kleenex with you. Here.
You would recognize the kid who rang the
door. I don't know, he looks exactly like all the rest of them.
I want to.
Okay, I don't know which family was here. Okay.
Thank you.
Is a relatively short perek. Again, perek Yudalid introduced the concept of the Beinoni, and again, remember that the Alter Rebbe's definitions are very unique and very, very different than the standard definition. The standard definition, which the Rambam employs, is a tzaddik, is a person who has more good deeds than bad deeds. Again, that is defined qualitatively, not quantitatively, but still, ultimately, more good than bad, you're a tzaddik, more bad than good, you are a rasha, and if you're equally balanced, you're called a beinoni. This is the Rambam's definition. The Alter Rebbe says, very, very different, he says that even if you do a single aveira, you are a rasha. So even if you have, it's a very, very high standard, even if you have 99.9% righteousness, the moment you do an aveira, you are halakhically considered to be a rasha. And indeed, the halakha that actually is correct. And if you consider, for example, the halakhas that say a person that is a rasha is ineligible to be a witness. So even if I was mechalel Shabbos once, you know, until I do Yerubah, I'm not allowed to be a witness. I am called a halakhic rasha. So rather, he says, the idea of the difference in a tzaddik rasha and beinoni. And maybe we need to move the room. I don't want. Okay, no, that's fine. They're saying, yeah, in the future we'll have to determine something. I'm wondering if the anybody from the from the center. I wonder if the center is the center available most of Shabbos.
Yeah, the center is available.
It is available.
Yes.
All right. So maybe the center is it's equally convenient. So.
In future weeks, or do you
want to... No. Today we'll be here, but next, maybe in the future we'll just go to the center for this year. Okay. We have more room there. Okay, so the idea of a tzaddik is the following. We have these two souls. We have the animal soul, which gets its spiritual existence from the klipa, meaning the light of God is filtered through these shells and through these impediments. And the animal soul primarily is ego-seeking, gratification-seeking. It seeks autonomy and independence from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then we have the godly soul, which gets the direct light from the Ein Sof. And we are in perpetual battle over what is called the Ir Katana. The body is called the small city. Right? The body has capacities. And the animal soul, and the which is located in the left ventricle, where the blood. And then you have the godly soul that is located in the brain. And the brain then spreads its influence to the right part of the heart, which gives rise to love of Hashem and the light. And both of these souls are in perpetual struggle to conquer. Who will control this machine? Right? Who will control this village? Two armies are constantly fighting. So the definition of a tzaddik is a person who has reached such a high spiritual level that the overflowing love of God, which his mind eventually brings to his heart, overflows the right ventricle, looking at it in a very physical way, and it literally overflows into the left ventricle, so that all of the evil energy that is there literally gets transformed into goodness. So there is no desire for evil, and not only is there no desire for evil, but there is repugnance and there is disgust for anything that does not bring a person closer to God. And this includes not only sinful acts, but even acts of physical gratification, which are not done l'shem shamayim. The personality of the tzaddik is moes bara, and moes bara, the despising of evil, does not come from the emotion of hate. It comes from the emotion of love. The overwhelming love of God is so powerful that anything that interferes with that love of God is something that is disgusting in the tzaddik's eyes. So the tzaddik is the person who literally does not have an animal soul, or, again, you could define it different ways, or the powers of the animal soul have been converted into goodness, and as a result, it is no longer getting its nurturance from the klipa, but the animal soul itself now gets its nurturance from the light of God, unfiltered. And as a result, essentially, the animal soul augments your godly soul to serve God. Now, the chiddush of the Baal HaTanya is that this is not a madrega that every human being will be able to attain. To put it another way, tzaddikim are born and not made. Now, it's interesting. Here's an interesting paradox. A person could be potentially a tzaddik and actually be a Rasha. Meaning to say, the Baal HaTanya is not saying anybody that's a tzaddik is born as a tzaddik. In fact, it may very well be that he's born with a very strong animal soul and a very big Yetzer Hara, and it may be that he's nichshol bi'averos and he's not even a Beinoni. But the potentiality of his godly soul is such that he could become a tzaddik. Now that's a real tragedy. A person could live and die as a Rasha when in fact he could have been a tzaddik, not just in the Rambam sense that he could have done tshuva and been a righteous person, but he literally could have been a tzaddik. A Rasha is a person in the other direction where basically the animal soul has become dominant, and the way it's described, he still has a godly soul, but the godly soul has been captured by the animal soul, and it is in Golos. It is in Golos. This is a microcosm of the Shekhinah being in Golos. My godliness could be captured, and it needs to be liberated. Now, the Beinoni is the person who doesn't sin. Meaning to say, at all times, his godly soul is in control of the Yer Katana. The Yer Katana has these three capacities, Machshava, thought, Dibor, speech, Maisa, right? That's what my body does. My body thinks, my body speaks, my body acts. It's like a machine. The controller of that machine is always, to be a Beinoni, is always the godly soul. But the godly soul is not so strong that it's managed to cross over into enemy territory. It prevents the enemy from gaining control of the Yer Katana, but within that left ventricle, there are still these desires, there are still these yearnings. The Ra has not been captured, it has simply been confined, and at any given moment it might break in, and therefore the Beinoni is the person who struggles. Now, what that means is the following. Every single person can be a Beinoni. Now that doesn't mean every single person is a Beinoni. If I sin, if I fail even once, I am a Rasha till I do tshuva. So Beinoni doesn't mean everybody's a Beinoni, but Beinoni is the madrega that is accessible to everybody. And that, again, if you remember at the very on the cover page of the Tanya, he says the Tanya is miyusad, it's based on a pasuk, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says the Torah is not in Shemayim, but kikaro ve'lecha hadavar meod, it is very near to you, it is very accessible to you, beficha uvilvavcha lasoso, in your mouth and in your heart, that you can do it. Essentially, the Baal HaTanya will actually explain this explicitly in Perek Tetzayin, the one after this, but he basically says that to actually change your heart so that there's no ra in your heart, that's a very, very difficult achievement, and there's no guarantee you can do that. But since the Torah appends the words la soso, action, so what it means is it is within everybody's possibility to basically direct the mind and the heart to do the Ratzon Hashem, even if in your heart there is still this struggle. Again, the Baal HaTanya, as I mentioned already a number of times, the Baal HaTanya is giving chizuk to people who have spent years and years and years doing mitzvos and trying to serve Hashem, but they still have yetzer haras, they still have struggles, they still have taivas, things aren't getting easier for them. And the Balatanya's message is, that is not a failure, that is not a chisaron. That is the world of the Beinoni. The world of the Beinoni is the world of struggle. And he'll see later on that in many ways the Beinoni is more beloved to Hashem than even the Tzaddik. The Tzaddik is like the general of the army. But the actual people who accomplish whatever has to be accomplished in terms of getting territory, in terms of vanquishing enemies, are actually the foot soldiers. Right? You could say, what is the most important part of the army? Well, the general has the strategy, the direction, but the common soldiers are the people that accomplish. And if there's a certain goal here, and the goal is to bring Hashem into the world, that Hashem should have a dira, you're making a residence, a place for the Shekhinah in the world, then he says it's actually the Beinonim that are doing that job, because they're confronting the Ra, and they're pushing against it. They're not letting it get victory. And therefore, every square inch, every time you succeed in not giving into the Yetzer Hara, you are making a place for HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world. So the Balat Tanya's message basically is that in the world of the Beinoni, there's going to be a struggle. Don't expect the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. Now, he does say sometimes a person may become a tzaddik. You may graduate to be a tzaddik, and he called that is ke'ein kibul schar, that is like a special divine reward, and that's me'ein olam haba, that is like getting olam haba, but not everybody merits to achieve that level. Now, this is very different, again, than the Rambam. Because the Rambam defines tzaddik very differently, and the Rambam discusses bechira, free will, the Rambam says every person can be as great a tzaddik as Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's bechira. You can be a tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu, you can be a rasha like Yeravam ben Nevat. Now, based on the Rambam's definition of tzaddik, the Balat Tanya would actually agree with that statement. The way you define tzaddik, every person can be a tzaddik. The only thing is, what you call tzaddik, I call Beinoni. Meaning to say, a Beinoni is a person who never, never commits an Aveira and lives only to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Dibor Maisa Machshava, but he is called a Beinoni because he has not totally vanquished the Ra in the Chalal Hasmali, the evil the desires in the left ventricle. But on the other hand, the way the Balat Tanya defines tzaddik, it would not be a true statement that every person can be a tzaddik. Some people are, some people aren't. Sometimes Hashem gives you reward. Sometimes you just have a certain innate capacity. Different neshamas have different capacities. We don't really know why that is going to be the case, but that is that is the metzias. And therefore, your goal in life is not to be a tzaddik. Now, he had mentioned that the Gemara in Nida, which began the whole sefer, that before a child is born, the neshama swears to Hashem, or the neshama is administered an oath, Tehi tzaddik, be a tzaddik, and don't be a rasha. And even if the whole world tells you you're a tzaddik, you shall be in your eyes a rasha. So the whole mimer, I'm reviewing a little, but the whole mimer seems to be contradicting, lurching back and forth. Be a tzaddik, and don't be a rasha. So first of all, if somebody is going to be a tzaddik, then of course they're not a rasha. What's the point of saying, be a tzaddik, and then say, don't be a rasha? And you just told me I'm supposed to be a tzaddik, and then you tell me, even if the whole world tells me I'm a tzaddik, I just say I'm a rasha. Like, well, what is it? I'm not supposed to be a rasha. And then, of course, if I think I'm a rasha, that makes me depressed and sabrachin. So the Balat Tanya interprets, remember, that Maimar Chazal this way. Be a tzaddik means that indeed a person should try. A person should try to develop a love of God that is so strong that it will spill over and turn the bad into evil. That's an aspiration. That's something you can work for. But you may not get it. And if you may not get it, there's a fallback position. At least don't be a rasha. Be a Beinoni. Meaning, if you can transform the evil into good, that's Gevaldik. If you cannot, at least don't be a rasha. Don't allow the Nefesh HaBahamis to take over the Ir Katana. Now then it says, and even if you're successful and the world looks at you as a tzaddik, because colloquially we would say if somebody is righteous, they're a tzaddik, you should always recognize that you have not yet destroyed that ra. And therefore, you should be in your eyes as if you're a Rasha. So the Balatanya is a little, the words are a little dochek. It doesn't mean you should look at yourself that you are a Rasha, but you should look at yourself as somebody that still has the Ra in the heart that could lead you to become a Rasha. And therefore, the Benoni has to be eternally vigilant. You can't be asleep at the wheel, because there's this Ir Katana that the Nefesh HaBahamis very much wants to conquer, and you have to be absolutely vigilant not to let it conquer the Ir Katana. Do we have a shortage of chairs?
We have space here. Just bring up one chair.
So I just mentioned that next week I think we'll move to the center, which is much more special.
Yeah, just a quick question, Rob.
Yeah.
So how would we describe then somebody who is kind of like a seemingly a master of teshuva, somebody who's like a who's gone from being a Rasha, or it's in their eyes sees themselves as a Rasha too.
Yeah.
Many decades later, there are real Baal teshuva move.
Well,
very large progress. Like, how can we say that they're still Ra there if they've completely like dissociated themselves with all the things that they used to do?
Well, remember a Beinoni is what we would call a tzaddik gomor. A Beinoni is somebody who not only does not sin in action, but also in speech, and even in thought. He does not allow his mind to dwell on any thoughts that are against the Ratzon Hashem. So you'd look at the, right, this is what Chassidim used to say. Chassidim said, before I learned Tanya, I used to think I was a tzaddik. After I learned Tanya, I say, halvai, halvai, I could be zoche to be a Beinoni. That's exactly the point. The definition of Beinoni is so elevated that the Beinoni is someone we would call a tzaddik gomor. And the Baal HaTanya writes, you could be a person who learns all day and davens all day and gives tzedakah and never do an aveira. And that's what it means. And the whole world says you're a tzaddik. And we would say you're a tzaddik. But remember, the Ra is still there in the heart. And therefore, you need to be very, very careful. And again, that's really what Chazal said in Pirkei Avos. Chazal said in Pirkei Avos, Al tamin bi'atzmecha. Do not have this total confidence in yourself. Ad Yom Mosach. Now again, there is a downside to this. I mean, the downside to this, which is a negative aspect, and the Baal HaTanya will talk about it later, is that chas v'shalom, this could lead to sadness. This could lead to depression. This could lead to the idea that I never have a sense that I'm on the right path, because no matter what I do, I could slip and I could fail and everything will fall apart. So the Baal HaTanya will talk about this, that avada there has to be simcha, and lehepach, the Baal HaTanya is actually giving you a little bit of a reassurance, because by saying you're not supposed to expect to live the life without the struggle, so if you have struggle, it's normal. It's part of life. It's part of your avada. It is not because you failed. It's not because you haven't gone far enough. And then he says that hergel nasateva, these are normal ideas, that habituation develops habits within you and you'll get stronger and stronger and stronger, but there still is going to be that Ra that's in you unless you're Zocha to the Madrega of Tzaddik.
So now, even if somebody even if somebody's conquered their Dibor and their actions to do a whole lot of mitzvahs instead of Aveiras,
so what they've done is they've conquered the Ir Katana.
Right.
They've conquered their Machshava, their Dibor, their Maisa. They have control of the machine.
Right, but even thoughts could be a very fine line, is what you're saying, that even...
Well, he says, you've even controlled your thoughts. Now, what does that mean? It means negative thoughts may come to you, but you're able to push them very quickly away. You kind of say to yourself, I do not want to be separated from Hashem for even 1 second. I will not allow these negative thoughts to control me. And that sometimes means, you speak, you talk to yourself. You actually say,
I'm beginning to wonder what purpose these definitions serve, because it's starting to sound like most of us are probably Rishon by that definition.
Mm-hmm.
And Lefera,
That's true, yeah.
Okay. Well, okay.
No, but the definition basically is that all of us can become Bainim. I mean, you know, every single day we have the ability to do tshuva and to become Bainim. And so we may lose it the next day, but then we can regain it.
I'm trying to understand, because normally definitions have, you tend to associate the word with another variable. Is the variable, for instance, whether we get Olam Haba or not? Is a Rasha entitled to Olam Haba or not? Like, what's the...
So here it's very, very clear. Even the Rambam's definition, which says a Rasha is a person who does more evil than good. The Rambam still says a Rasha b'derech klal gets Olam Haba. He goes to Gehenna for the averus that he did, and after the Gehenna, he will go to Olam Haba unless he does the very specific averus. Ein lo chelek Olam Haba. So Rasha and Tzaddik do not determine whether you go to Olam Haba.
So what does it mean then? What does it determine?
It determines, of course, what type of Olam Haba you get, but mainly it determines your...
It's a very qualitative difference?
Well, yeah, but these are infinite, you know, the difference is infinite. But this is not unique to the Tanya. I mean, you could raise the same question with the Rambam's definition, with any definition.
No, I'm trying to understand the differences. You see, the Rambam and Tanya, yeah, two different definitions of what a Rasha is.
Yeah.
But there must be a consequence of that. For example, you might tell me that Olam Haba, the Rambam believes you need to do X to get the same amount of Olam Haba, that the Tanya believes you need to do Y to get.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that what we're saying?
I think what the Tanya is really trying to do is they say, the Tanya is written in a complicated...
This doesn't give very much kiss, okay? Let's
well, that's the question. That's the question. The question is that this may be your reaction, and we have to think about this, but certainly the goal of the Mechaber, and I think as we go on it'll become better, the goal of the Mechaber is to give chizuk, because the goal of the Mechaber is to basically say that don't feel bad if you're still struggling, because that's what you're supposed to be doing.
I don't think there's anyone in this room, Rabbi, who could honestly say they have this much control, even of their mindset.
Yeah.
No, they get deeper in Machshava. So whether they struggle or not, it's fantastic we struggle, it's great, but we're really doing this. The fact that I'm now being told we're a shy, I mean, that's just...
The Alter Rabbi actually has Mamari Chazal that say, if a person does any Aveira, he is a Rasha in Hashem's eyes for that moment. I mean, that's, and Megabe Eidus, I had mentioned that a person is disqualified to be an Eid, even for one action of Chilul Shabbos.
Lefim Tanya.
No, that's not the Tanya. That's the halach. That's the halach of Shulchan Aruch. That's not, that's the proof of the Tanya. He didn't make that up. This is the halacha. Okay, but now you'll see, again, I understand that these definitions are so high. You know, this is a safer... It just reminds you a little bit of how the generations go down in so many ways, because this was a sefer that was written for the rank and file chassid. This was not written for the elitist. This was not written for the greatest chassidic leaders. This was written for the average chassid who wanted guidance from his rebbe regarding his tafkid in life, and that's what the sefer is about. Again, as I say, as we go on, I think things will get more practical and more lemaisa. Now here, actually, in Perek Tetzvav, he actually begins with an interesting practical discussion that overlaps with a lot of Musar shmuzim that you would hear in a mainstream Musar. First of all, he quotes a pasuk in Malachi. Malachi was the last prophet at the very beginning of the second Beis HaMikdash. Some say Malachi was Ezra, the same person. And this is from the Haftarah of Shabbos HaGadol. I have a special affection. It happens to be on Bar Mitzvah Haftarah, so Perek Tetzvav so abuses this. That was shortly after the events in the Navi. And it says, Malachi just came out. Yeah. Anyway, it says, V'shaftem v'ra'isem, you will sit and you will see the difference when Hashem finally reveals himself. You will see the difference between the tzaddik and the rasha, between the one that worships Hashem and the one that didn't worship Hashem. So the Baal HaTanya is all made on the fact that there seems to be a repetition here. You will see the difference between the tzaddik and the rasha, between the one that worships Hashem and the one that doesn't worship Hashem. is that just repeating tzaddik in Russia? So he says no. He wants to say no. He wants to say there's the tzaddik and the Russia, and the second dichotomy is a division within the world of the Beinoni itself. Beinoni. Now the Beinoni by definition is already a person who controls his machshava, dibur, and maisa. But one type of Beinoni is called an Oved Hashem, and one type of Beinoni is called not an Oved Hashem. So now we're making a new subdivision. What does that mean? So here the Bala Tanya differentiates a very interesting linguistic distinction between nouns and verbs. He says there's a difference between calling somebody an Eved Hashem and calling somebody an Oved Hashem. An Eved Hashem, who is called an Eved Hashem? Moshe Rabbeinu is called Eved Hashem, is somebody who's already, you're already an Eved, right? You're already done it. That's somebody who has already vanquished the Ra. That is a Tzaddik. He's already done it. He's an Eved. An Oved is somebody in the process. So, in a Beinoni, we have two different levels. An Oved is a person who struggles to serve Hashem. The not Oved is a person who serves Hashem, but it's not through struggle. And here he makes an interesting point. So, Yetzer Haras, or animal souls, or even Yetzer Haras, the way we normally talk about it, come in different varieties. There are different intensities, and there are different desires for different things, right? All Yetzer Haras are not created the same. He gives an example. There might be somebody who's very, very sanua in terms of not getting involved in improper sexual acts. But that's not because he's fighting his Yetzer Hara. That's simply because he doesn't have a strong libido. Meaning to say, that aspect of Ra does not come to the forefront. It's not very strong. Now, or the other way, there may be a person who loves to learn. But that's not because he's conquering his Yetzer Hara. Rather, his personality is an intellectual personality. So he loves to read, he loves to debate, he loves to analyze. Now, he's still doing good things. He's still doing mitzvahs. He's still directing himself to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But it's not through the process of conquering his Yetzer Hara. And therefore, one type of Beinoni is called one who is actively serving God by struggling and going keneged his nefesh bahamas. The other is simply doing what is called natural. So the concept is that avaida is going beyond your comfort level, finding challenges. Now again, you don't look for challenges that are likely to drag you down, but to go beyond the comfort. And that's how he interprets the meaning of the Gemara. Because the Gemara actually has a drasha, which the Bala Tanya makes a little clearer. The Gemara's drasha is, who is an Oved Hashem and who is not an Oved Hashem? This is the difference between somebody who reviews his learning 100 times and somebody who reviews his learning 101 times. 100 times, you're not Oved Hashem. So the Bala Tanya, not Melchor, is very schwer. What do you mean? I chazer 100 times? That's like I'm a sinner? I didn't serve Hashem? So he explains like this. He says, this Maimer Chazal dates from a time before the Oral Law was written down. So in those days, it was normal to review 100 times because you didn't have books. So what it's saying is, if all you're doing is what's normal, that's not called Oved Hashem because that's what you always do. When you do one little step, beyond the norm, that's called Aveda, because that's the Yetzer Hara. You know, they tell a story, it's not directly Nogeya, but it's a story about that Gemara. The whole story doesn't sound like it's a true story, because the story goes that somebody went to the Vilna Gaon, and he had said to the Vilna Gaon, he says, Rebbe Elio, we learned in Cheder together. It's already not true. The Vilna Gaon was never in Cheder. But we learned in Cheder together. You know, we kind of started off the same way. Like, how did you become what you become? And I didn't become anything like that. What happened? You know, we started off in the same place. again, as I say, the whole thing already is not a true story. But so the Vilna Gaon says, well, do you know the Gemara that the person who chazers 101 times, there's no comparison to the person who only chazers 100 times? Do you know that Gemara? So the person said, yeah, I know that Gemara. He says, do you believe that Chazal? So the person said, yes, of course I believe that Chazal. The Vilna Gaon said, I didn't. I wanted to test it out. So that made the difference. And the Baal HaTanya quotes another Gemara that says the following. The Gemara in Bava Metzia talks about certain arrangements where a donkey driver would carry your load. And if you went like 10 mil, he would charge you 10 zuz. And if you needed to go 11 mil, one extra, he would charge you another 10. And the Gemara says, that makes no sense. If you can get 10 mil for 10 zuz, like a taxi, right? The taxi takes a shayrut, right? If you just go to the predetermined location, that's fine. If you ask him to take you another 3 blocks, you know, it's going to be double the fare. Because the answer is, because what is habitually done is an easier type of job. This is what we normally do. You're asking me to go beyond the norm. Mm. That counts for a tremendous amount. So here the Baal HaTanya is making a point, really, in Derech Avoda, that he makes a point that the real Avoda of the Beinoni is to go beyond the comfort level, because only then are you actively fighting the Ra within yourself. If you're simply doing what is comfortable, even though you're doing good things, you're absolutely doing good things. Machshava, Dibor Maisa is doing the mitzvos of Hashem, but you're not fighting the Nefesh Bahamas, because your Nefesh Bahamas isn't directed into that particular Yetzirah. And he makes the point, and this can also be true with habit forms, meaning even if initially there was a struggle, right? Let's say initially you come to yeshiva. So to learn for a morning Seder is excruciatingly difficult, right? You've never learned for 3 or 4 hours, right? Very, very hard. So initially, you're absolutely serving Hashem. But then it becomes, easy or normal or comfortable. At that point, you're coasting. At that point, you're simply doing the same thing over and over and over and over again. So you, unfortunately, within the world of the Beinoni, you have been demoted a little bit from Avado Elokim, serving God, to Asher Lo Avado. So you need to find a new challenge. And the new challenge will sometimes, and it's interesting psychologically, the Bali Musar talk about this already, that we often pick as new challenges things that just fall within our comfort level already, as opposed to really, really, really taking on a new challenge. For example, sometimes a new challenge might be in the realm of Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. It may be talking to somebody we don't like. It may be reaching out to somebody that we don't enjoy being with. But it's interesting that psychologically, I mean, we go through this in Elul and Rosh Hashanah, when we think about ways of being misakin ourselves, it's often ways that are just kind of, you know, they're already, you know, make us comfortable, etc. It's kind of just doing more of the same as opposed to really, really breaking out. Now, again, you have to be careful because in any spiritual transformation, just like physical transformations, if you try to set goals that are too high, then you're likely to crash. So you need to make small incremental changes. But this idea of change is very, very significant. That is the idea of the mea viachas over the mea. Even one time makes a difference. Mea viachas. And that's the idea of the chamor driver. One extra stop, you know, is worth the whole trip, the whole ride, the whole 10 stops for only 10 zuz. One extra stop is going to be worth the 10 stops. And this is the idea of perpetual growth. The Vilna Gaon says in Mishlei, the Vilna Gaon writes in Mishlei, that there's no such thing as staying in place. Unless a person is committed to growing, inevitably you're going to go down. to put it in a more modern context, life is like a downward escalator. Did you ever, I don't know, I did this when I was a child, I haven't been doing it lately, but did you ever try, when an escalator is going down, to try to run up the escalator? You can do it. But the point is, if you simply stand still, you're not going to stay where you are, you're going to go down. And the Vilna Gaon says, that's what life is like. If you simply want to stay the same, you're going to get pulled down. Meaning even the good stuff that you do, is not going to have the same spiritual effect, because now it's a matter of habits and comfort, and it's not a matter of the active struggle, and therefore that's the difference within the world of the Beinoni, between the Oveda Lokin, Liasher Lo Avada Yavanash.
So we're saying these are sort of two categories of Beinoni.
Yeah.
But in truth, we have to think of these as two facets of every Beinoni, correct? Because each person is going to have areas where they're not struggling,
right,
and areas where they are achieving, but they are struggling.
Yes. No, that's 100% correct. Because obviously, if you daven every day and you're comfortable with that, we're not going to tell you to stop doing it. Yeah. Now, in fact, let me just mention that... this is, in fact, Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, let me just say that there's an... I'm sorry, did you have a... You want to say something, too?
I think I understood something when it was told to me that you shouldn't daven for challenges. You shouldn't ask Hashem to challenge you. So why... Would it not make more sense to ask Hashem to challenge you rather than for you to put yourself outside of your comfort and challenge yourself? Because Hashem knows you better, and Hashem will give you what you can overcome, rather than you choosing, because it's more dangerous if you choose.
No, it is dangerous. So when I say challenge, I don't mean to say... You know, it depends. I don't mean to say put yourself in a situation where you'll be tempted by Aveira. That indeed you're not allowed to do. Although that would fit, if you survived it, that would be an example of serving Hashem. But you're not allowed to do that. I'm talking about really setting goals. That's really what the Rebbe is talking about. The Rebbe is talking about the idea that a Jew has to be a person who sets goals to go a little bit beyond. And again, these are small measures. You already learned 100 times. Do 101. Doesn't say do 201, you know. Do 101. So the idea more is to set spiritual goals. Challenge yourself. You know, marathon racers always like to say that they're competing against themselves, not against other people, to set, you know, better time. So that's what you do. Yeah, Ellen.
Sorry. just to challenge the idea that if you survived the situation, you wouldn't be serving Hashem. Surely Mr. Baba Avera is not legitimate.
That might be so. In other words, I didn't mean to say, you know, what you're saying might be possible if I deliberately sought out the situation. I just meant to say, if it fell into you against your will and you survived it, that would be serving Hashem. I agree that your point might be correct if you deliberately seek it out. Yeah.
To continue with the downward escalator metaphor for a second, is it possible that one could lengthen the height of that escalator or change the slope of it? Hmm. Or is that predetermined?
No, I think by definition. Well, okay, that's a good insight, because by definition, you also build the escalator. Meaning to say, you have to determine. Because again, I do want to repeat, this idea of setting goals has to be taken with a meaningful perspective. You know, you can't just say, unless you're able to, you shouldn't just say, this year I'm going to finish Shas. You know, I would think for most people, I don't want to prejudge anybody, but for most people, that might be a little bit of an unrealistic goal. But to say that, you know, I'm going to, Mir Tzashem, try very hard to finish a Masechta and Chazarit a few times, that I think a person might be able to do that. Or whatever it would be, a Perek of Mishnayos or Masechet of Mishnayos, you got to set the goal, that's the only point. There has to be something that is challenging you. Now, in this sense, therefore, it's important to understand, although the Baal HaTanya does not explicitly say it, but other Tzvarim say it, that if the definition of the Oved Elokim is the one that is struggling, then it could very well be that even if he accomplishes less than the not Oved Elokim, in Hashem's book, he is more esteemed. There's a famous passage from someone much, much earlier than the Baal HaTanya, one of the Gedolei early Achronim, maybe even a late Rishon, the Mabit. The Mabit was Rav Moshe ben Yosef Trani, and he was in the time of the Beis Yosef. He was a member of Rav Yosef Karo's Beis Din in Tzfat. They didn't get along. I mean, they had some very, very bitter and strong machloksim about
Shem.
The Mabit. Mabit is one of the great, great poskim. And I wonder if this is the Beis Yosef quote, or he might not even quote the Beis Yosef, but whatever. They had a lot of fights about Shemitah and the like, because the Mabit held that Shemitah did not apply. In fact, it's Nogeh the Hatcher Mechira. In other words, the Rabbanut selling land to non-Jews to get out of Shemitah is fundamentally a Machlokas, the Mabit and the Beis Yosef. Basically, that's it, that whole debate. And that was a very bitter, bitter Machlokas in the 1500s. And at one point, the Beis Yosef threatened he would put the Mabit in Cherem, unless the Mabit was truly stuck. But be it as it may, they both were great, great Gedolim. And the Mabit, in addition to his Piskei Halacha, also wrote a Sefer of Hashkafa, Jewish philosophy, called Beis Elokim. You could get it in Sfarim stores, Beis Elokim. But they have new editions there, a renewed interest in learning Beis Elokim. So in the Beis Elokim, the Mabit goes on a Gemara in Ksuvas that talks about the son of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi got sick, and the son of Yeshua ben Levi died, or at least had a near-death experience, and his neshama went up to Shemayim. We would call that today a near-death experience. Mm-hmm. And he got revived, and then he was asked to describe what he saw, and he told his father, "I don't understand. Eilam hafuch ra'isi, I saw a topsy-turvy world. Elyonim, the big shots of this world. Lamata, they were at the bottom. Tachtonim, and the people at the bottom in this world. Lamala, they were all the way at the top. I don't understand. The big shots in this world were not significant there. And the lowly people were so high and so elevated." Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said, "You did not see a topsy-turvy world. You saw a true world. Olam Emes Ra'isa. This world is topsy-turvy. You saw reality." Now, Frek de Mabit, what does the son mean by Elyonim, the people on top were at the bottom? Does he mean rich and powerful people? Well, Mehechitesi. I mean, why would there be a Havamina? Just because, good, Baruch Hashem, there are rich and powerful righteous people, but just because you're rich and powerful, that's not going to count in Olam Haba. So what is so surprising that the big shots in politics and wealth didn't automatically have a big chelek in Olam Haba? So this is what the Mabit says, and it fits the Tanya very beautifully. But this is from the Mabit. The Mabit says, Elyonim, people on top, does not mean people of material greatness. It means people of apparent spiritual greatness. And he gives an example of learning. Let's say you're a person that's a great, great Eloi, genius, and you're able to learn 100 blot of Gemara a day. Phenomenal. 100 blot of Gemara a day. And you decide, 100 blot of Gemara a day, I'll just do 50 blot of Gemara and I'll take extra time off. So you learn 50 blot of Gemara a day. And then you have another person who struggles to maybe do one blot a week, but he's really working his hardest to do it. So we would look at these two people, and one person we say, what a Lamdin, what an Eloi, what a person, Talmud Chacham, who knows Torah. And we look at the other person and we say, well, listen, he tries, okay, listen, Nebuch. But we would certainly think, in Hashem's book, the guy that's doing, 50 blot a day is way, way ahead. The Chiddush of what the son saw in Olam Haba is that's not really true. Because the guy that's learning 50 blot may have accomplished so much more, but he only gave Hashem 50% of his koach. And the person who does one blot, no one gives 100%, but it's closer. The one that only does one blot is 100%. So what Hashem is judging you on is not based on what you've accomplished objectively, but how much of yourself have you given. In the language of the Bala Tanya, the one that is struggling so difficult, even if he's achieving less, is an Oved Elokim. And the one that could have done much more, but it comes easy to him, is Asher Lo Avado. Now he still may be a Beinoni. Although again, how do you cheshbon the Bittul Torah? I don't know. That may take him out of the category even of a Beinoni. But intrinsically, he's doing great things. And this again is a very, very important idea. Hashem is judging you by how much of yourself you have given him. And here, let me just mention, Rabbi Chanan Wasserman uses this Yesod to be Masber the Rambam. Although the Rambam works with a different definition of Tzaddik Rasha Beinoni. The Rambam's Lashon is, every person could be a Tzaddik like Moshe Rabbeinu. So Rabbi Chanan says, well, wait a second, you know, okay, every person could be a Tzaddik, going with the Rambam's definition. But to be like Moshe Rabbeinu, that's a little hyperbolic, that's a little bit of an exaggeration. I could be like Moshe Rabbeinu? Can that possibly be true? So he says the following. Moshe Rabbeinu was called Eved Hashem. Now the Baal HaTanya refers to it because he already destroyed the Ra. But the Radak is a Rishon, Rav David Kimchi. And the Radak wrote mainly the most important parish on Nevi'im Rishonim L'chol HaPachas, the Radak, every Mikros Gedolos. In fact, the Ramban was Machshev, the family, so much. The Radak's father was a Mefarish, and the Radak's brother was a Mefarish, and the Radak himself was a Mefarish. So the Ramban said on this family of biblical interpreters, "Im ein kemach ein Torah." It says in Pirkei Avos, if there's no flour, no parnasa, there's no Torah. So he said the Kimchi family, without the Kimchis, there is no Torah. Im ein kemach ein Torah. Anyone here from London? You know, there's a Rav Kimchi. Oh, so you know, do you know Rav Kimchi? Do you know Rav?
No.
So Rav Kimchi is a Rav in London who's actually a direct descendant of the Radak. Well-known Rav in London. Okay, so the Radak says the following. The Radak says, why is Moshe Rabbeinu called Eved Hashem? This is very fascinating. The Radak says he's called Eved Hashem because there's a halacha by an Eved. Ma shekana eved, whatever an eved acquires, kana rabba. Meaning to say this, if an eved kanani, the Amish says, if a non-Jewish slave finds a diamond ring, it belongs to the master. Now, of course, if the eved doesn't report it, no one's going to know. But still, according to halacha, whatever an eved acquires belongs to his master. So the Radak says, Moshe is called Eved Hashem because every talent that he had, he gave to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's service. That's the Radak. So says Rav Elchanan, with this we can understand what the Rambam means when he says, every person could be Moshe Rabbeinu. None of us will accomplish what Moshe Rabbeinu did. His neshama was much, much greater than our neshamas. But just like whatever he had, he gave to Hashem, that's a madrega that each of us can achieve. And if we give to Hashem that which we have, we are on that madrega of Eved Hashem. Yeah,
Maybe I've heard this argument before, and I still have the same problem with that. That you're right, theoretically. In theory, I grant you, it's plausible.
Yeah.
Surely the very fact that probably 99% of people don't achieve that, Rodrigo, probably, surely that very fact testifies that there's something wrong with that theory, that the theory is incomplete. For surely otherwise, you're telling me it's possible, but there can't be a 50-50% Bechira to do that. They're not even an 80-20, not even 90-10. Surely the evidence shows that it's just not real.
In other words, it's not shy to reach the 100% level.
Correct.
Yeah, I understand.
It's not even shy to reach any.
Well, let me put it this way. This is not a problem with Rabbi Chanan. If you learnt the Rambam the other way, it's even worse. I mean, if you learnt the Rambam, every person could be Moshe Rabbeinu, you'd have a bigger problem, I think. I mean, Rabbi Chanan may not answer your question, but at least it makes it a little better.
How do you understand this?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. Again, I mean, none of us Now, obviously, I don't want to speak about anybody, but most of us do not reach this 100% potential. I understand. But the Rambam is telling us it is possible. I mean, listen, the Baal HaTanya's definition of Beinoni is somebody who never sins with Machshava, Dibur, Maisa. You know, that's also something that's virtually not
possible. Would he claim it's possible to reach a Beinoni or even plausible, like probable?
Is it what? Say that?
Would the Tanya say it's possible or probable to reach a Beinoni?
Well, he seems to say it is. In fact, he that's how he interprets the Pasuk. Ki karo ve'lecha hadavar miyod. It is easy, it is accessible, it is doable. He is referring to the Beinoni.
How do you understand this? I'm sorry, it's much the evidence is completely sensitive.
I understand.
No, but just as point of fact, as long as there is someone in every generation, and I think there has been in every generation, who can achieve this level as Rav Elchanan is explaining it, meaning not that they're at the level of Moshe Rabbeinu, but that every one of their talents is given over to a Kodesh Baruch Hu.
Right.
As long as there is someone in that generation who can do it, it means that it's possible for someone in that door in that time to do it.
So
it is not a commentary on livelihood.
No, but the Rambam says it's possible for everybody.
Right, but if I have a case example,
okay,
that means
it's possible.
It's possible.
It's possible.
But then you'll be invited that 0.001% probability.
But it's possible. It's possible. It's possible.
It's possible, but it's so unlikely.
Well, let me put it this way, though. But you have a goal. You have a goal, so you work towards it. So good. I didn't accomplish the goal b'shleimus, but I have a goal to work towards. So I give 90%, 80%, whatever it would be. Now let me just say, meinyan, that's what I mentioned. The Sfas Emes makes a similar point in the mitzvah of machtzus hashekel. Well, we have a mitzvah in the Torah that every year, when we had a Beis Hamikdash, we would give a half shekel, which would be used to buy the korbanos, the korban tamid, right, the daily offerings, the Shabbos offerings. And this is machtzus hashekel. And the Torah insists by machtzus hashekel that everybody has to give the same amount. Ha'asher lo yarbeh, rich people cannot give more, and poor people cannot give less. It has to be a uniform amount. Everybody gives the same. And the question that is asked is, I understand poor people can't give less. There is a concept of minimum contribution, meaning this is your responsibility, borrow if you have to. But why should there be a rule? Rich people can't give more. Now, in the Midbar, when the half shekel was used to count the population, so I understand why everybody has to give the same, because if people don't give the same, you don't know how many people gave. But that was only in the Midbar. They didn't use the machtzus hashekel for population counting. Normally, it was just a financing mechanism. So what's wrong? I mean, what yeshiva? We just had our building campaign, right, last week. I mean, somebody pledges money, we're not going to say, that's too much money. Sorry, we don't take more than a certain amount. I can assure you, our Sameach is not going to turn down donations. Of course, I guess there might be conditions. They tell a story about the Panovich Rav, that when he was building one of his maestas, so some guy was a wise guy, a non-religious guy, he said, I'll give you $1 million, on the condition that none of your students wear kippot. So people told the Panovich Rav, well, we can't. The Panovich Rav says, I'll take it. The Panovich Rav took the money and he built a Beis Yaakov. He built a girls' school. Okay. So sometimes there are ways of figuring that out. But here is what the Sfas Emes says. The Sfas Emes says that Oshir and Oni are symbolically not only rich people and poor people, but rich people are people in Ruchnius. They have many, many talents. You know, they're brilliant, they're charismatic, they have leadership ability. Oshir. And Oni is a person that may be a little bit bereft or a little short of all of those talents. And what the Torah is emphasizing is, when it comes to the Beis Hamikdash, which is connection to God, the rich and the poor stand with equality of access to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as long as they do the best that they can with their kochos. And therefore, the usher is not automatically better than the ani. Rather, the usher and the ani have the same potential based on how much of themselves they give. This is the Radak about Eved Hashem. This is Rav Ochanan's message about Moshe Rabbeinu. This is the Mabit of Elyonim Lamata Tachtonim Lamala. And this is the Balatanya, that to be an Oved Elokim is the one that is struggling, and therefore it is the struggle that defines you as the Oved Elokim. Yeah, Ali.
I'm sorry. We're defining the usher not as somebody necessarily have loads of wealth, just somebody who has numerous talents. Therefore, surely what he is saying is that if that's her, again, it's in order for his answer to be a valid answer, he would have to say that Torah wasn't even talking about a rich person with loads of money.
No. Well. Obviously, ein mikra yosi v'dei pshuto. So obviously, the Torah is talking about a rich person.
But this is, he's got a beautiful drush then. But he hasn't.
No. But he's saying that the Torah, the halachas of the Torah, are often symbolic of inner meaning. I mean, this is what midrashim do all the time. Midrashim do not replace the structure of the psukim, but by the Torah saying your greater resources don't give you more of a portion, that is conveying a symbolic lesson. Greater resources in any area will not give you more of an entitlement.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the concept of Medrash, that Medrash understands. Medrash does not replace what the Pasuk says, but it gives you a symbolic. Yeah.
Rav, was Moshe Rabbeinu a tzaddik according to the Tanya definition?
It would seem that he was, yeah.
Then why was he not allowed into Israel?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, in fact, this is a very interesting question. Did Moshe Rabbeinu sin? He clearly did sin, because that's why he hit the rock, or whatever the Avera was. There are many interpretations. And that's why he did not go to Eretz Yisrael. The question is, can a tzaddik sin? I mean, that's really a fundamental question. And after all, what Shlomo HaMelech says, Ein tzaddik ba'aretz, there is no tzaddik, asher yaseh tov, who does only good, v'lo yechetem. So that's a very, very difficult question. If a tzaddik has truly destroyed the evil within him and converted it to good, how is it possible for a tzaddik to do an avera? There's literally no yetzirah. That's a good question. We'll discuss a little later. I don't have an immediate short answer. The Baal Tanya goes into that towards the end of the Sefer. Yes, Ellen.
Sorry, just one quick question about what you were saying before about the drush tending to compliment Shach. I learned very little Chumash Rashi, but one of the Rashis I did learn, for example, in Kamoichel Kapari, he gives a pshat, and three midrashim that are totally say to a pshat, the Chorah.
Well, this is complicated. You know, somebody wrote a book called What's Pshat in Pshat? It's not so simple. Pshat can itself exist on many, many levels, and sometimes a medrash is supplementing pshat, but it's still going with pshat. Other times the medrash is giving you a different pshat. Pshat is not only based on grammar, it's based on other indicators as well. It is based on textual indicators, meaning to say, pshat is tied into a text. But a text like the Chumash will often convey messages through different styles. And therefore many midrashim are actually omek ha-pshat.
A medrash doesn't necessarily have to be textually consistent or consistent with other things.
See, that's correct. The reason is, the Netziv writes in the commentary HaMikdavar that the Torah is called a Shira. Shira means a poem. It's not musical. It's called a poem. And the reason is because poetry is written differently than prose. Poetry is often written in a very indirect style that hints to various things. And even though you might think, well, that's not the way a normal person talks, poetry is not written the way a normal person talks. And therefore, the pshat itself, the Torah was written a certain way. Okay, so anyway, I just wanted to finish. Perek Tetzvav, again, the important distinction is between the Oved Elokim and Asher Lo Yavadai, and the idea that the Beinoni does have to look for challenges, and indeed, your chashivas in God's eyes depends on the challenges that you are surmounting. and even a challenge that is, that has been successfully surmounted, you can't be complacent, you can't be coasting, you can't sit on your laurels, so to speak. One has to seek out growth and challenges and new ways of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But I would just add, as the Bali Musar tell us, you have to do it in reasonable increments and not try to, right, the person who wants to run a 26-mile marathon when they've never jogged in their life would be well advised to have a bit of training before they do that. And in spiritual goals as well, one has to kind of move slowly but consistently. So again, as I say, this is a very, very practical type of Eitzah, in which, as the Vilna Gaon writes, if you're not trying to go up, you inevitably will wind up going down. Okay, so have a good week. So Mirzachem, next week we'll be in the center. Okay, just, yeah.
You said that tzaddikim aren't made, they're born.
Yeah.
And then the Rambam says that everyone can become like Moshe Rabbeinu.
Yes.
The one shot is that you give everything to Hashem, but surely giving all that you have to Hashem is the level of a tzaddik.
Yes.
So then you can, everyone can become a tzaddik.
Well, no, I would say not, because give Hashem everything that you can would mean, like the Bala Tanya, you give Hashem your machshava, your dibur, and your maisa, the ir katana, but there is still this negative thing in the life that you haven't quite conquered. Okay, you have a good day week, everybody. Good time.